Okay, so hopefully y'all got to go around tables, but those two questions kind of connected to what we're talking about tonight, and so I'm excited to hear from Tim. And we might revisit those as a group here in a second, but I want us to be able to make sure we have enough time to hear everything from Tim. So Tim, will you join us, and can we say yay, Tim?
Hi, Tim.
Thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you.
I'm so excited you're here.
I was worried there was going to be music on this that I was going to have to sing or something.
Yeah, I know. No, Lip Cinco de Mayo is not yet. It is coming. So if y'all don't know Tim, this is Tim Puckett. How long have you been at First Baptist?
I think it's been about 12 years now.
Okay. So church member, he directs the 20s single adults class with his wife, Diana. You've probably seen his son, Callum, running around. He has two awesome kids. You've been serving in the single adults ministry for a long time now, right? Yeah,
it's been a while. I honestly haven't kept track
of how
long it's been.
I feel like since I've been here, you've been serving in the single adults in some capacity.
How long have you been here?
4 years, almost four years now.
At least four.
I think more than that. But anyway, Tim is awesome, but I'll also let you kind of introduce yourself and what you do. I know you own your own practice, your own PT practice. And so help us, what made you decide to open your own practice and start your own business? And how did you get into physical therapy to begin with? And your calling there? Yeah, unpack that for us.
Yeah, for sure. So PT was just a really good fit for what I enjoy doing personally, and just kind of the lifestyle that the career allows. So I was interested in some form of healthcare. Yeah. Physicians work some crazy hours oftentimes. And often don't get a whole lot of time with their patients. Yeah. And so in looking at the field of physical therapy, most PT sessions are an hour long, and you get to spend more time with your patient. Most of the time, you know, it's an 8-to-5 work day, no on call, no weekends. And you get to help people be active, and I enjoy being active as well. So that kind of is what led me to physical therapy. After graduating from PT school, I worked for a PT clinic here in town for almost 7 years. Enjoyed my time there. Didn't really have a whole lot of opportunity to kind of think outside the box, so to speak. We were pretty, it was a very busy clinic, and, you know, just turning over, you know, patient after patient. And so looking at the opportunity to start my clinic and kind of change the way I was able to treat and serve people was kind of one of the biggest reasons to start my own clinic. Just a brief overview of like in-network physical therapy versus out-of-network. So in-network, it's fully being processed through insurance. So the big, bad, greedy insurance companies dictate everything. And basically, PT clinics are, you know, they've got one hand tied behind their back and they have to see a high volume number of patients. So you don't get the personalized care. Out of network, we get to operate, and my clinic is out of network, we get to operate how we see fit and what is best for the patient. And so I went from seeing 22 patients a day in network to now seeing 22, 25 patients a week.
Oh, wow.
So I get to spend a lot more time with my patients.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, so that time with one-on-one, being able to work with them to get back on track, but also build relationships, right? That you can't do that as quickly if you're seeing that many people a day. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that's awesome.
And that's a really fun part of it. You know, we've got multiple examples of maybe the son of the family, you know, is injured playing soccer, and we help them with their injury. But then dad's like, you know what? You know, I've got some back pain. Can you help me with that? And then mom's like, yeah, I've got hip pain. And we end up seeing the whole family. And it really is just, you know, being able to serve the entire family is really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's, so we're talking about a lot of things. We're partly talking about physical therapy, but also about, I know that you specifically, you chose to, like you said, open your own practice and your own business. So you're a physical therapist, but now you're engaged in this world of business that, I don't know if that was your plan going in, if that's what you had always wanted to do, but now I've never, like, I never thought I would go into business, and I still don't think I will ever go into business, right? And so that's a whole world that I've never given a lot of critical thought to, of how would I engage in that world as a person of faith, right? And so that's part of what we're talking about tonight is your practice, but also the way that you engage in that world of owning your own business and those kind of things. And so what obstacles have you encountered while starting your practice and getting things going, or have there been times when what would be considered like a smart business decision didn't actually line up with your values or your faith? Yeah, what obstacles have you encountered as you've gone on this journey?
Yeah, I think the first is people. So, you know, people are awesome, but can be challenging to deal with. And So I do have two employees, and I've had different people fill those positions, you know, throughout the clinic has been open almost 6 years now.
Wow.
So we've had some staff turnover, and, you know, people have, you know, life situations that come up. And So, you know, dealing with those issues can be challenging. The common thought in the business world is, you know, hire slow, fire fast. You know, if someone's messing up, just get rid of them. I don't operate that way. I try and be very gracious. Now, I do have to hold them accountable and hold them to a standard, but I would say I'm a lot more lenient than most other business people might be. So that's one thing. Personally, I've been in debt, and I've worked hard to get out of debt. The only debt we have is our home mortgage. And so I'm debt averse. The business world is full of people that will leverage debt all day long to try and build a business. And that's just a personal decision. I don't know. I mean, I think some of that comes from my faith. And, you know, there's some, you know, scripture that we can reference that speaks on debt. But that's my personal decision in running the business. The business itself has never been in debt and never taken on loans. So I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if I were to compare my business to a colleague, you know, we're probably growing slower or, you know, have passed on opportunities than other businesses may have. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But maybe it's just because I know that you have this business and that I've seen your logo before, but I've seen Puckett Physical Therapy like out in the city a lot. Like I used to go to Orange Theory Fitness, right? And they did like a clinic or some sort of event at Orange Theory. And I was like, oh, I know them, you know, that's so fun. And so you're not like a small operation there. I mean, like you said, you have two employees, but you might not be growing as fast as other practices are, but you're out there in the community. That's awesome. That's really encouraging.
Yeah, it's provided so many opportunities to really serve. You know, we kind of specialize in working with athletes, you know, that have sustained an injury. So, you know, we serve a soccer club, a basketball club, you know, some different gyms. But, you know, we go to where those people are and provide, you know, advice or, you know, free assessments or, you know, different things in that regard. And so, like, really being able to engage the community is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so when you were deciding to do this and as you've built your business, what are some principles that you've built your practice on? And how has your faith informed those things, the intentional choices that you've made?
Yeah, this has definitely evolved over time. When I first started the clinic, like really my initial thought was, I just want to treat patients the way I believe is best and what is best for them. And so I just wanted to replace my job. I didn't really have a vision of having employees or growing, but seeing the opportunity, I kind of saved myself from burnout. And then realizing I had the opportunity to maybe save another PT from burnout as well and bring them on as an employee and allow them to treat the way that they you know, want to treat. So I didn't have core values when I first started the clinic, but I do now. And if we look at the core values, there aren't scripture references to them, but they're definitely based on my faith and how I believe we should interact with people. So let me see if I can quote my core values without looking at it. So number one, we care about people. Number two, we listen because we care. Number three, we serve everyone. And no matter our position or title, we serve. And so being the boss or the owner, like I'm still going to take out the trash or open the door for someone. And really, I still treat patients, but I serve my employees almost more than I serve patients sometimes. Where are we at? We spend quality time. The reason that we spend that quality time is if I don't know my patient, then I can't help them as well. I can't help them reach the goals that they have if I don't know what those goals are. And then the last is we strive for excellence. And we know that excellence takes hard work.
That's awesome. And that's, you talked about, you kind of saved yourself from burnout. Cause I can imagine seeing 22 patients a day, that's a pace that would be really hard to keep up. Right. So you feel like you've noticed as you've hired folks that have kind of come out of that world too, I don't know, maybe new life or new energy comes from working at a slower pace, which is not like the business model that we're used to, right? In any capacity, right? In just in our culture, you do as much as you can for as long as you can, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Number one, like if I was wanting to make a whole lot of money, then physical therapy is the wrong career, just in general. But number two, our business model is the quality time and the one-on-one treatments. That's not as profitable as seeing four patients an hour. But that's something that we're not going to sacrifice. People deserve our best. And, you know, self-care is not selfish, right? Running the rat race, you know, trying to see, you know, so many people, you're giving just parts of yourself or parts of your expertise to people and not your full attention or your full, you know, brain capacity. And, you know, if I'm having dinner with my wife, she would expect my full attention and she deserves that. And, you know, she's important. So is every customer or client or patient that we interact with as well.
And that's a big deal. I mean, that sounds like, oh yeah, you know, of course people deserve our full attention, but that's not the experience that we have a lot of times, especially in healthcare settings, right? And I feel like you and Blaze have similar things there. Like that's not what we're used to getting. And so that's a big deal to make that a core value of what you do.
How many of y'all have called a healthcare provider and they answer the phone, what's your date of birth? Like that's all they care about. Punch in your date of birth, see your chart. Okay, we've got, you know, a month from now, you know, Thursday, 10 a.m. You don't want that. Well, that's the only time. That's what you have to do. You know, I mean, like, they don't even know your name. Unfortunately, that's pervasive in every industry, but healthcare has gotten really, really bad in that. I think the average time it takes, like a patient is explaining what's wrong, the average time until a physician interrupts the patient and then tells the patient what the physician thinks. Any guesses on like how long that takes?
Oh,
that's a good question.
That is a really good question.
I actually don't know.
Probably.
I guess that it is.
Probably.
But if I were to guess 30 seconds.
That might be generous. I don't know.
That is generous. 7 seconds is what I've seen.
That's crazy.
So,
and for the like slightly hypochondriac people like me that want to tell you my whole life story and why I think this pain in my like pinky finger is life-ending, mm-hmm. yeah, I've been, now probably for good reason, I've been cut off sometimes, right? But that's, yeah that's hard to to care about people when you're on a, and it's not always their fault, right? They're, like you said, they're in this cycle of, this is the, just the way that they're practiced, that they're a part of, that maybe they don't have control over runs, right? But that's what, you've kind of taken some power back with opening your own practice to treat people the way you want to.
Right, and and really just handing that power over to the patient.
Yeah.
You know, they, I've had some sessions where we've talked for 45 minutes of the hour.
Yeah.
Because that's what they needed. That's what they wanted that day. And, you know, before, I would have never done that. Like, no, we need to get to this, this, and this, and then I need to get to the next patient.
But,
you know, I would like to think that those, just that, that sentiment or, you know, that ability to slow it down and listen to understand. I feel like that's what, you know, God would expect us to, mm-hmm. to do when someone is coming to us in need.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. 'Cause that's so much of, you know, so much of the examples that we see in scripture, right, is, you know, people trying to care for the poor, but kind of just pacify them, right? Or to say, well, I don't know, be warm and fed, right? And kind of just make the problem go away, right? But that's not, the example that we get with Jesus is him kind of painstakingly, to the point of annoyance to other people, slowing down and stopping and taking his time with people, literally to the point where, you know, now he's all powerful, but somebody died because he did that, right? You know, he was on his way to see somebody. He stopped to see somebody else on the way, and then that person that he was supposed to see passed away. Now, there's, you know, a lot more to that story that he knew, right? But it is a deeply biblical thing to take our time with people, but it's not, that is not what we naturally want to do, right? And that's, that goes against a lot of what we're told in culture. And so that's amazing. So this is sort of similarly to that. How should Christians engage, like if there's somebody here that's like, okay, I want to engage in the business world, or even if, or they already are, how do Christians engage in a capitalistic business world with good conscience, where you're trying to, right, to balance the goal of making a profit, right? Because you want to make profit because you have to eat, right? And you, most people want to make more money than less, you know, in general, right? Yeah. So you're balancing that goal of trying to make a profit, but also serving the poor and living in a scriptural way, right? How can people of faith engage in that world faithfully and balance those things?
This is a tough question, and I don't...
I wrestle with this a lot.
I certainly don't have the answers. I think the number one thing is understanding that money is not evil.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't have this guilt about making money.
Yeah.
We're not going to change the society that we live in. Mm-hmm. At least not, you know, we're not going to change the need or the use of money.
Yeah.
I think intent is everything. You know, Proverbs, you know, what we're going to, I mean, what we're studying
I
this week
that.
Is, yeah, it's all about intent, right? Like vegetables versus, you know, steak dinner, like they seem different. You know, the person eating the steak dinner should be, you know, more fulfilled, but,
I'm
starting to trail off.
No, you're good. The scripture for this week is about eating vegetables in a company full of love is better than eating, you know, a 5-course meal served with hatred. That's the proverb for context. But
So, number one, not feeling guilty about making money and needing to charge for the services that you're providing. really, I think money is just a form of trust, mm-hmm. or a form of energy transfer.
Yeah.
Certainly it has value. That's the way, that's the system that's been set up. But it's someone showing trust that you're going to do what you say, or someone seeing value in your ability to help them. So yeah. If we don't make a profit, the doors close, you know, the PT that we've saved from burnout doesn't have that yeah. job anymore. You know, we can't help people that are seeking help.
Yeah.
Certainly they can go find help elsewhere, but you know, the way we want to help them, we need to make a profit to stay open. And as long as we are upfront and honest and fair, and you know, there's not deception, and we're not making decisions strictly based mm-hmm. on profit, then I think as a Christian, we can be a business owner. But even as an employee, you can sleep well with no hesitation yeah. of thinking like, you know, we're screwing people over.
Yeah.
I really believe it comes down to your heart and yeah. your intent. And yeah. If your intention is good, people are happy to give you money for the results that they're seeking. And that's not a bad thing. I yeah. think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Because that's, we've talked about that in Sunday school, right? We've talked about, you know, for like Blaze and I know Emily and several others, like they're in that process of negotiating their first contract, right? So mm-hmm. now we're just getting off on money in general, right? But there's this like heartburn that comes with mm-hmm. that. And Blaze has talked about that before of like, who now, partially it's this guilt, right? We have that verse that says, you know, sell all you have and give it to the poor, right? And we're kind of living with that tension of money's not bad, but it is so hard to deal with money well that we don't know what to do, right? And that's part of it, is that it's just not bad. It is a neutral thing, right? It's a necessary neutral instead mm-hmm. of a necessary evil. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as food.
Yeah.
I really think that, you know, if your intentions are poor, it's going to catch up to you in some form or fashion. And, you know, we see the dishonest businesses, at some point they get caught and,
yeah.
and they get, you know, there's repercussions. And so not being afraid of allowing God to bless my business, bless my family, which in turn will bless the church that I'm attending and tithing to, you know, we're just managing or stewarding what God has given us, whether it's our time, our breath, you know, our family and money, and allowing God to use that to bless ourselves and to bless others, is the mindset that someone needs to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that was our original calling, right? Was stewardship mm-hmm. in the garden. That was like the first thing that humankind was told to do, right? Go and multiply, steward the earth, right? And that's, we overcomplicate it a lot, right? But that's really all we've been called to do, regardless of how much we've been given. Our calling is to be good stewards, right? But that's, I don't know, we do a lot of crazy math to make it more complicated than that for some reason. But, because that's, I've just struggled with that concept. And for some reason, I've had that same heartburn of like, I'm worried I'm going to sin when it comes to money. So I freeze, right? And I don't know what to do. But you're like, I tell people this a lot of the time when it comes to other conversations, but you're like, lower the stakes a little bit, right? We're just being called to steward what God has given us, right? And so how has your work in physical therapy and owning your own practice and those kind of things, how has that grown your spiritual life? How have you seen God at work through those things?
Yeah, so there's a lot of uncertainty of, you know, your income coming from a business. As an employee, you know, if you're salaried, then you know what your paycheck's going to look like. You know, some people might, you know, work in sales, and so, you know, it fluctuates based on production. But for the most part, you kind of know what's coming in each month as an employee. As a business owner, you don't. And there are some stressful times, especially, you know, not only... I'm thankful my wife has a job, and so, you know, we've got two incomes for the household, but, you know, my family's depending on my income, but my employees, even more so, are depending on, you know, the income of the business, and I feel responsible for, you know, in a way, providing for them. So just I pray for God's provision very, very, very often, because, as hard as I work, it's still only God's provision that sustains us. You know, I can do all the right things, but sometimes, you know, for one reason or another, patients choose to go elsewhere. It's out of my control. And so really trusting in God to provide has really been the biggest faith journey since starting the business.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big deal, right? Because that's my in-laws own their own business, and that is, you know, there's these big waves of business, and then it slows down, right? And there's this constant faith that you're living in, you know, because you can't control. You don't know what mm-hmm. it's going to look like in the future. Yeah, even though you feel like you have all the control, right? Because you own the the practice, right?
Right.
You can make all the smallest decisions, but that doesn't mean it's going to, I don't know, turn out exactly the way you think, but that's a big step of faith. And then also, what lessons have you learned from your patients as you've, six years now, you've been in this practice? Yeah. What have you learned from your patients?
It's a lot. You know, in thinking about that question, I had, you know, a lot of different things to talk about. I think one big thing is how important your mindset is. When patients want to get better and believe that they will get better, they get better.
Yeah.
When someone doesn't really believe that they can get better, oftentimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, mental helps manifest physical, but the power of the mind is really, really impressive. And so... I try and approach each day with a positive mindset, you know, hopeful in the Lord to provide, not just for myself, but recently I've really been reminded to pray for my patients.
Yeah.
It's easy to rely on my own understanding of how the physical body works and you know, use my school knowledge to help, but the Lord has been reminding me a lot to also pray, pray for the healing of my patients. And so, I think those are two really big areas.
Yeah. That's awesome. Very cool. Would you be willing to take some questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
any questions out there from y'all, for Tim? Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, that physical therapy is, when I've done it, like in high school, when I have been injured or whatever, it is, the work that y'all do is obviously healing physically, but there's a lot of emotional healing that comes along with that, right? Even if it was a kind of a run-of-the-mill injury, right? It's a vulnerable thing to come and say, help, right? You know, please heal me. And it's a vulnerable thing to heal in front of somebody and to kind of trust somebody with that. And that's, like you were saying, that's a spiritual work to be involved in, right? And we've talked a lot about the mind, body, spirit triangle, you know, in here. And I'm sure you've seen plenty of that with your patients there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Yeah, Lucas.
Yeah.
The caseload right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or a doctor's office, you had more patients versus what you deal with now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was at an outpatient PT clinic, seeing 22 visits, 22 patients a day, which, you know, that was an 8-hour shift. So that's doing crazy. The math there, you know, 10 or 15 minutes with each patient, and then passing them off to a high school kid or maybe a college kid that we've trained to supervise their exercises. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that's how the majority of your in-network PT clinics are going to operate.
Yeah.
Now, my role has changed a little bit in the clinic. I do treat about 15 patient hours, 15 visits a week, and the rest is spent on, you know, marketing and you know, leadership and community interaction and so, you know, running the business. But when I was just solo PT, starting the business myself, I got up to 25 to 30 patient visits a week yeah. compared to 22 a day.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
Yeah, over 100 a week in the old yeah. clinic, and then you
that's
know,
wild.
25 to 30 in mine.
Yeah. Huh, that's crazy.
That's a good question. So on our website and the, you know, the provider profiles or whatever, I share a little bit of my testimony, and I've had a few people, you know, from the first phone call to seeing me, and they're like, you know, we know you're a man of faith, and we are too, and we really appreciate that. And I think that creates an even deeper bond and better trust from provider to patient. There are some people that, you know, it's obvious they aren't a Christian, and I don't push or I tread lightly, but I do, you know, I won't shy away from, you know, hey, what are you doing this weekend? They say what they're doing, like, and they naturally ask me what I'm doing. Like, well, you know, my kids have, you know, soccer games on Saturday, and then Sunday we'll go to church. And, you know, I'd maybe try and share in that way, just like, you know, this is who I am, this is what we do. I don't recall a time where I've sat down and actually shared the gospel. But I will say, you know, is it cool if I pray for you? That doesn't happen very, very often, but on occasion I'll do that.
Yeah.
Did that answer the question? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is hard to discern where someone is at with that kind of stuff, right? Especially because they're coming in kind of vulnerable already,
yeah.
right, when they're coming to see you.
Yeah, and they are vulnerable, but there's also, yeah. like, there's healthcare laws that,
yeah.
You know, I, as a healthcare provider, I cannot discriminate in any
yeah.
way. And so, you know, if they get the sense that I'm, you know, maybe pushing my faith on them that they don't have, they could take that as, you know, a type of
yeah.
discrimination. So I do have to be a little careful.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Any other questions? Yeah, Emily.
Yeah. And support myself. And
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm concerned because as a new grad, we're just not going to be given a lot of support. We're also going to be paid very low.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yeah, there's a lot to that. Number one, I would say good work will never go unnoticed. So regardless of the situation you might be in, providing the best care, the best work possible is always the best way to go. And that will get noticed at some point by someone, and it will come back to serve you well. So number one, despite situation, give your best. The second, I would say, find mentorship somewhere, somehow, some way. It could be in the workplace. It could be outside of the workplace. But find mentorship that can help guide you through, you know, whatever stage you're in. And I think those two things will lead to opportunity. I really do. I don't know. Yeah. You have thoughts?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. That's... I know that's hard to, like, in some ways, yes, you are, you know, you're coming in the fresh, newly graduated, right, quote unquote, the lower person on the totem pole, right? So, and sure, then, and everybody goes through that, right? But that doesn't mean that what you have to offer lacks value, right? And so I haven't been in that scenario where there's like this, you're going to take this full load of whether you like it or not. Right. And you're like, well, I have to eat. Right. So I guess this is what I have to do. But, what you don't get fooled into thinking that what you have to offer doesn't have value just because your workplace isn't honoring that value the way they should, if that makes sense. And I know that's, that only, you know, can carry you so far, but the Lord has called you to this work. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, like was said, that work is going to go and be noticed eventually, but your work, because it's fueled by your faith, has so much value. And so where it might feel like you're paying your dues, right, or kind of figuring out how to get started, there's so much value in what you're offering. Yeah, Laura.
Yeah, great question. I graduated PT school in 2011 and started working at that job. I've only had one other PT job before starting this clinic. So 2011, graduated. I was single, worked there until 2018. We got married in 2015. So 4 years working as a single adult.
Yeah.
And during that time, you know, I mentioned I've been in debt. I had student loans, and those 4 years being single, I worked to pay off those student loans as fast as I could. So, yeah, 4 years living on my own, trying to pay off debt. I wasn't thinking about starting a business at that time, but... but yeah.
I just wonder if like that stage of like kind of a grind that's unavoidable is an opportunity for single adults to lean on each other.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's a different sense when you're going home to somebody who will shoulder part of that burden for you. Being single, there has to be some intentionality to sharing the burden that you carry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, each stage in life has different challenges. I'm a part of a business group specifically for PTs that own a business. And so, you know, it's very niche, but it's cool because we're all, you know, in a very similar boat. And I'll look at some of my colleagues in that group that are single, and you know, their business is you know, growing fast, and you know, they're able to put whatever time they want into the business. They don't have to, you know, drop kids off at school or, you know, whatnot. So, you know, there are advantages of being single. And then there are advantages of having a partner as well, yeah. You know? And so, yeah, whatever situation you're in, use those things, you know, as an advantage. Yeah. And Emily, circling back to contract negotiation, if you want any coaching on that, I would love to help you out.
Yeah.
it's something that is kind of, okay. Yeah. I can give you like the, you know, the business perspective of it, like, you know, what you're negotiating against type of thing. Mm. Yeah. So that'd be fun.
That is hard. And we've talked a lot about this in Sunday school of, it's hard to know if what you're asking for is reasonable to begin with, right? But also this, like, and this was how I was applying to jobs in May of 2020, when no one was hiring, except for Brian Richardson, for some reason, right? And so I had this moment of, like, I would just like a job. Any job will do, right? And I almost didn't even want to look at the salary, right? Because I was like, I just need employment so that I can have insurance, right? There was this kind of moment where, you know, but at the same time, it's important to know what you're worth, right? And to know what you're offering has value, right? And so it might take time for you to feel like, okay, I'm getting paid what is the true value of my work, right? But that's a hard balance, right? To not have heartburn over that process. That's really hard. Yeah. 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 Yeah, you're not alone in that. I know that's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. On that, I've, as a business owner, I've made decisions out of fear, and those are often wrong decisions. And oftentimes when you come to the point where you're like, I have no other options, this is the only option, that's when I find that, oh, I was actually lacking in faith in this situation. I've made a bad hire because I thought it was the only option. You know, various things. And so in any aspect of life, if you feel like, wow, this is the only option, I'd spend some time in prayer about that. And try not to make decisions based out of fear.
That's really good. That's what in my yearly Bible reading right now, I'm in the Saul and David saga, right? And so many of Saul's decisions are made out of fear, where he backed himself into a corner because of disobedience, right? And he's like, and he just kind of makes a decision purely fear-based, right, that was so unnecessary, right? And then you see David running for his life and still coming to the Lord, say, Lord, should I do this or that, right? And there's this faith that requires that I don't often have, right? I tend to go the Saul route a lot of times and just kind of shoot from the hip when I feel fear, right? But that's a good reminder. Yeah. Any other questions for Tim? Oh yeah. How did you learn how to navigate these things?
It's interesting. You know, most people who start a business, their parents owned a business or yeah. No. My grandfather, so my dad's father, he was a pharmacist and had a pharmacy. But I think, you know, in that day and age, like the only way to like be a pharmacist was to open up your own little, you know, corner drugstore. So I don't know how much of a businessman he was. He was just a pharmacist that had a corner drugstore. my parents never did. No, I don't have like a pedigree of being a business owner. I had to seek coaching and help. In school, I only learned how to be a PT. And so I just sought out others that had done it. And, you know, that created opportunities for them to coach other PTs on how to do it. And so I'm currently paying for a business coach or business mentor. I had to find resources somewhere.
Yeah, that's awesome to have like a business coach. That's a good idea. That's awesome. Because that's, you know, like you said, they don't teach you how to open a practice in PT school. They teach you how to be a physical therapist, right? And similarly to, like, if Blaze wanted to open a practice, they don't teach you how to do that at all in med school. And they don't, in seminary, they don't teach you how to keep a church's finances straight, right? And so, especially if you're at a small church, right, you're at this point where you're like, oh, no. The numbers aren't adding up, and I have no idea what to do about that, right? Thankfully, we're at a larger church, and I have nothing to do with that stuff. But, you know, there's none of us are trained in everything that our job requires, and that's a hard day when you realize that, right? And so to be able to ask for help and have humility in that way is a big deal.
Yeah, I think with anything in life, the ability to be self-aware and understand when you need help or advice or further knowledge can go a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we weren't taught personal finance in high school either.
Right.
You know, but we should. We should be taught that. But, you know, thankfully, my dad, you know, provided some of that knowledge and then pointed me in you know, the direction of some books. But just knowing when you don't know something is a big deal.
Yeah. And that's especially for someone, and I think I've noticed this across, regardless of the discipline, if you're a highly trained person in some area, whether it's physical therapy or medicine or whatever it is, saying I don't know is like terrifying, right? Because that's kind of beat out of you over the process of school and, you know, and getting to where you are now, you learned how to avoid those words, I don't know, right? Because that's not how you advance, right? And so the humility and the honesty to say, I don't know about something, that's a big deal, right? That's a moment of humility that the Lord honors when you're willing to say that.
I guess another question. I kind of know where your wife's background is, but some people may not know. But how did she react when you said we're going to have this business? Mm. And obviously, I'm sure she went off and prayed, but I know her background also came in.
Yeah.
So I hope that question makes sense.
But yeah. How was Diana?
Yeah.
I know what she does.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Right. She was supportive the whole time. Now, that doesn't mean that she didn't have fear or apprehension, but she was supportive the whole time. Diana is an athletic trainer, so a similar field to physical therapy. Most athletic trainers work at a school, like a high school, and they take care of the athletes that get injured at that school. Most of the time, it's kind of the acute management of the injury. They do some rehab, but PTs do a lot more extensive rehab. So very similar fields. So it helped that she understood, you know, the PT and the opportunities there.
Yeah.
She's very cautious and conservative with, you know, money and big decisions. You know, we definitely prayed about it and just showing her the plan really went a long way. It wasn't just happenstance. You know, I had a plan. I also had a little bit of a safety net as far as I took a really part-time job. When I quit my full-time job and opened the clinic, I took a very part-time job doing home health, which is literally driving to a patient's house and doing a PT session for them in their home. So a you know, contracting company. I was a contractor for them, and you know, would take assignments at. So, providing a little bit of a backup, a little financial backup in the startup stage was beneficial too.
Yeah, that's a big leap of faith for your whole family, right? Mm-hmm. When you do that kind of thing. Yeah. Any other questions for Tim? Awesome. Well, can we say thank you to Tim for joining us? Yeah. Thank you. This is really encouraging because I think a lot of us get, I don't know, either heartburn or just unease over these kind of things. How do I engage in these things faithfully and well, but also, you know, we need to eat, right? And so there's that balance that is hard to draw. So you do it with calmness that a lot of us don't always have. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.